bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. We're glad that you join us. I'm Paul Dragoo. So we're going to begin by looking at the latest developments in the Middle East, where things got a whole lot more intense. Check this out.
Iran launched more than 300 cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, and drones toward Israel, raising concerns about broader conflict in the Middle East 6 months after Hamas attacked Israel, when Iran began sending drones and missiles toward Israel. Air raid sirens blared across Israel and explosions were heard over Jerusalem as Israel's Iron Dome air defense system kicked in.
All right, so joining us for today's discussions are Editor-in-Chief of the New American Magazine, Gary Benoit, and we have Steve Bonta, who is the Executive Senior Editor. Steve, tell us a little bit more about what happened over the weekend and what we can expect going forward from Israel, of course, and even the U.S. Obviously, we're heavily involved.
Okay, well, back on April 1st, April Fool's Day, perhaps not coincidentally, the Israelis apparently struck a diplomatic facility of Iran in Damascus, Syria, where a bunch of bad guys who were like the head of the Quds organization were holed up, managed to kill a bunch of them, six or seven. Now, it's important to note the Israelis have not taken responsibility for the act, although everyone knows
they never denied it, though.
They never denied it, but they didn't actually take responsibility for it. Iran immediately vowed revenge for what has to be characterized as a pretty gross violation of diplomatic norms. Not that Iran is anyone to talk. You know, these are the guys that took the entire American embassy hostage once upon a time, and we haven't had relations with them since. So they're hardly Lily White. Anyway, they vowed retaliation, and that's what this seems to have been. So on Saturday, they launched over 300 total vehicles consisting of a mixture of ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones.
Yeah.
I got some exact counts of them, like 160 drones and 120 ballistic missiles, something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Iran had cruise missiles, but apparently they do. The Israelis, meanwhile, have this very, very sophisticated,
Iron Dome, huh?
You know, the Iron Dome. And, you know, this is very, the video coverage reminded me a lot of the Gulf War more than 30 years ago, only back then it was Iraq launching Scuds and Israel using U.S.-supplied Patriot missile batteries to shoot them down. And as I recall, one or two of them got through, or the nose cone of one was blown off, unexploded, and fell into a suburb of Tel Aviv and killed some people. But, you know, back in the day, it was Iraq that was happily lobbing missiles at Israel when the politics seemed suitable. The significance, perhaps, of this event, and it's maybe more symbolic than anything else because, you know,
you're talking about Saturday's
event, is it's the first time that Iran has directly attacked Israel.
Oh.
In the past, it's always been accomplished through
proxies.
Their many proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis. Mm. Why do they all begin with H? I don't know. But anyway, the various H, extremist groups are all Shiite.
Yeah.
And, and every time Shiite happens in the Middle East, you can always guarantee that Iran is behind it. But they're very clever because they maintain a certain layer of plausible deniability. This time around, they simply come out and said, no, we're attacking you. They did it very directly, in much the same way that they directly attacked a U.S. base in Iraq after we killed Soleimani a few years ago in a drone
strike. I'd imagine
that
maybe for pride reasons too, right? Because I mean,
a lot of it's saving face and pride and all this. And the question is, of course, what will Israel do now? Will they retaliate in kind? Will this then?
Well, Israel's saying they will to some degree that there is some.
They said they will at a time of their choosing, which leads me to suspect that they may indeed, in the short run, take the win, but harbor it up because sooner or later, they or somebody are going to have to deal with the problem of Iran developing nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Which you could bet they're working to prevent
from
happening.
Yes, and so that's going to require some sort of pretty massive military operation. Yeah. So at this point, I'm actually traveling through the region next week on personal business, so I kind of hope that the missiles aren't flying at that point, but we shall
right,
see.
Right, that would be... Now,
I do remember, again, going back to the Gulf War and then the Iraq War, more than a decade later, every time a major thing starts in the Middle East, there are always these alarms being raised. Oh, it's going to be World War III because this could trigger that and it could set off a chain reaction and could bring in these. And they, I mean, yes, Iran has a relationship with China, has a relationship with Russia.
Right.
But those two countries are up to their eyeballs in problems of their own right now. I'm not sure that, you know, even if Israel and or the United States, which supposedly we're not going to be involved in a retaliatory strike, but even if we were, I'm not sure that Russia would rush to their defense and we'd have World War III just like that. So a lot of this is overblown. The Middle East is the world's greatest war theater. Emphasis on theater. They're good at looking scary and yeah. All this kind of thing. But
and as usual, you know. Though, our lawmakers are urging that we stand with Israel. Right. I want to play this clip from Senator John Kennedy about how he sees this. Can you guys please roll clip two?
We're not at war with Hamas. Israel's not at war with Hamas or Hezbollah or Yemen. Those are all surrogates for Iran. Those are they're prostitutes. The pimp is Iran. Israel is at war with Iran. Iran hates Americans. Iran hates Jews. Iran wants to kill Americans and Jews.
They have made
and if we turn the other cheek to them, we're going to get it in the neck.
All right, so that seems pretty hawkish. Steve, you looked a little perplexed.
I was just being distracted by that music that was
yeah,
playing.
Yeah, yeah, the music was weird. But Gary, that does sound a little hawkish, doesn't it?
It sounds very hawkish. But yeah. I'd like to point to one thing that could easily be overlooked because, you know, Steve mentioned that if you go back years ago when Saddam Hussein was in power in Iraq and mm-hmm. he fired Scud missiles at Israel,
yeah.
and those were taken out at least a number of them. I believe a number did get through, but I don't think it was on the scale of being in the hundreds, but now we're talking about over 300
yeah.
Drones and missiles fired at Israel, and almost all of them were taken out. So,
A large portion of them by us, right?
Right, and
what
a large
was it,
portion
like a third
by
of
us,
them?
But the point is it can be done. You can have a defense system that can take out these missiles, that can take out drones. And my question is, why can't the United States do the same thing? I mean, obviously we have the technology. Why can't we deploy such a system to protect the United States?
Well, who said we can't? And what are the dangers that are posed to
everybody in the left said it back 40 years ago when Ronald Reagan tried to develop the so-called Strategic Defense Initiative, or SDI, and it was immediately lampooned in the press as a Star Wars system
yeah.
and turned into a national joke. Because the idea has always been to keep the United States, to hold the U.S. hostage
right.
to the whim of these various scary dictators. Yeah,
mutual assured destruction.
Right, that we're told we need to fear. And,
right.
and we, well, we
which
ahead.
Appropriately has the acronym MAD. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. it is madness.
It is absolutely
well, but,
insane.
But why do we do this? The reason is that you can keep, if you can keep America, if you can continue brandishing those the bugbears that H.L. Mencken talked about in this case, you know, the bugbear of a nuclear weapon, mm-hmm. a nuclear attack by the Soviet Union, by Russia, by China, by North Korea, and we're always defenseless against it. Well, you can always threaten people and cow them into submission and get them to go along with whatever the current, you know, globalist agenda item du jour happens to be.
Yeah.
Now, if you set up an American equivalent of the Iron Dome and say, okay, you know what? No nuclear missiles are getting through. We're done with this. We're going to do whatever we have. I mean, the Israelis aren't just using anti-missile missiles. They now have a laser system that's apparently cutting these
things apart. See, that's the
kind
of things that would get laughs, but that's true.
Right. And they also have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever officially been acknowledged, but everybody knows it.
Yeah. We have a minute left. So it's not surprising that MAGA, and especially Trump now, is saying, hey, look, he's using this as an opportunity to say, look at all the madness. We could be on the verge of World War III, all this stuff. This wouldn't be happening if I was in charge. Who wants to go? Do you think that would be the case, Gary? I'll let you. I mean, it's hard to tell, right?
Unequivocally, but I think is a basic principle to mind one owns business and to be prepared for war is the best way of preventing it.
Yeah,
that's the foreign policy we once have. That's the foreign policy we should readopt. And if we were to go in that direction, I do believe the world would become a safer place.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that...
And that would include a robust element of actual defense.
Yeah.
You know, missile batteries or whatever to defend American cities, which right now are completely bare to a possible attack by the Russians, the North Koreans, and the Chinese.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear that the world is very different with Biden in charge than Trump. So thanks, guys. After this, we are going to talk about how lawmakers continue to choose the intelligence agencies over the people. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and The Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. The New American senior editor, Veronica Karolinko, just interviewed Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Check out this preview.
You said, quote, "The COVID pandemic has opened my eyes to the failure and corruption of the global elite and their institutions, including the government." Can you talk about the global elite, who they are, and how they factored in into the pandemic response here in America?
And it's the individuals that are running the World Health Organization that are funding it, and then highly influential, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's the Klaus Schwabs of the world, the World Economic Forum. Again, I don't know exactly how they pull the strings, but what I will say is that they exert far too much influence over our lives, over our governments, than what they certainly should. But there is, again, as you talk to medical researchers who couldn't get an independent review board to peer review their studies, they couldn't get published. You know, important papers, they couldn't get published because our medical journals have been thoroughly corrupted as well. So the people who sit at the top, Bill Gates is all about vaccines, right? And you know, he wants everybody vaccinated, I don't know how many times a year. A lot of money in vaccines, you know, without liability. That's part of the problem. It's opened my eyes too. I've never been an anti-vaxxer, but now that I've seen what has happened with the COVID, it's not a vaccine, it's an injectable product.
All right, so good on Senator Ron Johnson. He tells it like it is. We've got to interview Senator Ron Johnson here at HQ as well. You can watch the interview at thenewamerican.com. It's broken down into two parts, and I believe part one has been available since Friday. We should have part two there. Check it out. And not only that, share it with your friends. Share it with your family members. It's already exploding on social media. It's well worth watching. So now we're going to go to our next story. All right, guys. So things got pretty dramatic last week and in a pretty serious way over FISA reauthorization. So we've been keeping up with this. FISA, of course, stands for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And Section 702 of FISA basically allows the intelligence agencies for these warrantless surveillance of foreigners. But what happens is the communications they receive from Americans that they're in contact with, then they're swept up in the process. And so essentially Americans end up being spied on. So naturally, a lot of people have been pushing their lawmakers and they've been saying, hey, we need reform. And so there's been this battle. Last week, it got pretty intense. But nevertheless, we got to a point where the House did pass FISA reauthorization without a single amendment. The vote was 237 to 147. I want to play this clip from Tennessee's Republican Congressman Tim Burchett. This is what he had to say right after the vote.
Not a good day for democracy. FISA has passed currently through the House. The amendment that would have stopped warrantless searches on Americans. I get what you're saying. Warrantless searches on Americans. It did not pass. So warrantless searches will continue. And that's not really good, folks. I was told by the State Department that those that warrants were problematic. Well, I got news for you. The Constitution is problematic to the State Department and the intelligence community, the FBI and the rest of them, and it should be. They should not be able to do searches on you electronically or otherwise without due legal process, not without going before a judge. It's a very sad day. We've allowed the intelligence community to run Capitol Hill. And once again, the Uniparty has collected all their folks in and won. And that's why these elections are so important. Dadgummit, I don't care if you go to church with a member or you're in your Sunday school class, you play golf with them. Look, if they come down here and vote to take away your constitutional rights, why in the world would you all keep electing them? Either party.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Burchett really gets it. But the real drama was actually before this vote, and it was over the amendment to require, of all things, warrants, you know. And so the vote actually came down to 212 to 212. It was a dead tie. And guess who came in to break the tie? Speaker Mike Johnson. So this is the way that Congressman Thomas Massey reacted. He tweeted, "This is how the Constitution dies, by a tie vote. The amendment to require a warrant to spy on Americans goes down in flames. This is a sad day for America. The speaker doesn't always vote in the House, but he was the tiebreaker today. He voted against warrants." Now, interestingly, Mike Johnson used to be on the other side, and there's video of him talking about how he, you know, maybe a year ago or whatever, he would have been on the side that said, get a warrant. But then he was brought into the skiff or whatever. He had these intelligence briefings, which apparently they're given to everyone to try to sway him. And apparently it doesn't work for all of them, because you have Tim Burchett said the same thing last week. He's like, they never gave any details. They bring into the skiff and they tell us this, but it's always just all this fear. But this raises up the question of Mike Johnson. I want to play this last clip from Senator Rand Paul, and here's what he had to say about Speaker Mike Johnson.
I want to also ask you about what you heard from the speaker regarding FISA. Can we trust government? Can we trust government to use FISA appropriately and legally?
Absolutely not. Americans shouldn't be spied on by their own government. The Fourth Amendment was put in by our founding fathers to protect us. FISA doesn't obey the Fourth Amendment. And so Speaker Johnson was incredibly wrong. He broke the tie. He voted with the Democrats. Here we have the leader of the Republicans in the House votes with the Democrats against a warrant requirement. We also have Speaker Johnson voting for the spending package, once again, with the majority of the Democrats. As I see it now, I'm not sure there's a difference between Mike Johnson being in charge and the Democrats being in charge. The debt, the deficit this year will be $1.5 to $2 trillion, and that's Mike Johnson's bill. He put it forward. He supported it with a minority of Republicans, with a majority of Democrats. This is not using the power of the purse. This is abdicating the power of the purse.
So, Steve, that's a pretty damning indictment there of Mike Johnson. Is it fair?
I am so over Mike Johnson this morning. So over him. I mean, we kind of knew this was coming. The search for the new speaker was underway. We all kind of threw our lot in with Jim Jordan. We knew Jim Jordan was a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And of course, he got deep six.
Of course.
And out comes Mike Johnson, whom we're told, you know, looking at his voting record, it's better than Kevin McCarthy's, but not outstanding. And as it turns out, surprise, surprise, he as the D.C. establishment clack loves to say, grown in office, such that now he's essentially morphed into a smooth Southern version of Kevin McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have to say about that. I mean, this is just, This is pathetic. This vote should have been a no-brainer. They had the thing stopped.
Yeah.
Of course, then, you know,
yeah.
I mean, as one of the people remarked, I think it was Burchett remarked, the intelligence community runs the show.
It does.
In Washington, D.C.
And he says it like it is. Gary, what do you make of all this?
Well, Congressman Burchett referred to the uniparty.
Yeah,
by good point. Which he meant the unity at the top of the Republican and Democrat parties on the national level. They work together for more government, leading to total government, and more internationalism leading to world government. And that's becoming more and more obvious. But actually, if you do put the Republican Party under a microscope and you put the Democrat Party under a microscope, I would say there may be a difference there at the top, because in the case of the Republican Party, they appeal to a conservative constituency, while the Democrat Party appeals to a liberal constituency. Yeah. And so I could say where some people are not paying close attention could be beguiled. Oh, this is supported by a Republican.
Yeah.
This guy has an R after his name, and therefore maybe it's not that bad, or maybe it's something we should support. But we've got to change that thinking. We got to get back to the Constitution, not look at who's a Republican, who's a Democrat,
yeah.
but let's look at who is following the Constitution. And as Congressman Burchett points out, I don't care if you're going to church with this person.
Yeah.
But if this person is violating the Constitution, if he's violating his oath of office, we should not support him.
People do need to understand that.
Like, can we just point out, if this were actually about security, they would secure the southern border too.
Right.
That lays bare the hypocrisy of this
Absolutely.
Whole thing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's all about spying on American citizens.
At all, yeah. And there's a number of things, like you said, that they'd be doing if they really cared about security. Let's continue this conversation afterwards.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, The New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
All right, Gary, before we move on to our next story, you bring up such a good point, and it's one that I think we bring up quite often, but it's worth bringing up every time, because this is how we got into this mess. The way that they pander, like you said, the Republicans pander through the rhetoric. They pander through the conservative base. And the conservative people, whatever, the Republicans, they hear and they're, and so they want to go along with it. But, and then the meanwhile, the Democrats pander obviously to the left. But in the end, like Burchett said, like we've been saying, it's just a racket. It's all one, like Carol Quigley says, it's all, what did he call it? Only doctrinaire and simple minds think that, you know, there's a difference between the parties. This has been the way things have been for a very, very long time. And that's one of the reasons, and we're going to plug our Freedom Index here, because we have the Freedom Index, and it's the Congressional Scorecard. And so we devised this, we put this thing together, we look at their record, and we give them a score, a freedom score. And the reason this exists is so we can get past the rhetoric, right? You know, so it's like, don't listen to the rhetoric, don't whatever the pandering that they're doing. Let's look at their score. And you can go to the New American .com. There's Freedom Index. You go to JBS.org. There's Freedom Index. And you put in any legislator there. And now we got state scorecards too. This is super, super important, because this is how we get away from these guys who are part of the uniparty, who apparently bow down to the intelligence community over the people. This is absolutely insane. Can you imagine what the founding fathers would say if they saw this?
Well, maybe they are seeing it, but they would have to be rolling over in their graves.
Gee whiz. Yeah. So speaking of rolling over in their graves, we have an interesting story here about how Democratic lawmakers, They're going after private citizens who are friends with justices. Am I getting this right, Gary?
Well, yes, that's absolutely correct. And I want to mention in particular Leonard Leo, who is co-chairman for the Federalist...
Oh, what a coincidence.
The Federalist Society.
Yeah, he just...
Right, which is, you know, a group concerned with law. And a lot of its members are lawyers and people involved with law. Mm-hmm. And their position is basically a libertarian conservative approach to the law that, my goodness, if a lawmaker makes a law or a lawgiver brings out a law, that we should go by his intent. We shouldn't reconstruct it.
Yeah.
And so Leonard Leo, for many years, has been a friend of Justice
Thomas
mm-hmm. going back before
Thomas
became a justice.
Apparently they went on fishing trips.
The left is really, really going after him.
Yeah.
And so last Thursday, a Senate committee issued a subpoena, the Judiciary Committee, to bring him before the committee. And Leo is refusing to do so, and properly so, because this whole thing is basically a witch hunt. What they want to do is they want to basically give him a third degree and get all kinds of personal information and records and whatnot regarding his friendship with Justice Thomas to see if there's something they can use against Thomas.
This, Steve, this sound, is this legal? Do you know? I mean, this sounds really fishy.
I think that ship sailed a long time ago. The question of whether anything that's going on now is legal is, I mean, for, most of what government does is unconstitutional and superadded on that. We, of course, now have this naked campaign of lawfare, which, as predicted, is now expanding out from Trump and the alleged malefactors.
They're going
of
after
January 6th.
Private citizens.
Now they're just, they're just going on all out. I mean, because what's happened, you know, sort of referring to our previous story about the Uniparty, is that there's a faction within the Republican Party, anchored by the likes of Gates and Marjorie Taylor Greene and so forth, that's off the reservation, that's out of control, that's trying to actually effect real change.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're being partly enabled by people like us, frankly, and others in the blogosphere and in these various think tanks and organizations that sincerely want to shrink the size of government, to change the way business as usual is being done in D.C., and this is unacceptable. So they're pulling out all the stops, and they're getting more and more concerned as the November elections.
They're picking off individual members of the House.
Oh, sure, sure. So I mean, it's all part of a larger thing. And I mean, we should mention, of course, that today is another historic first, with President Trump going on trial.
The first time a president is taking the criminal charges. Gary, you look like you wanted to add something else there. No? Okay.
No,
it is pretty, I mean, this is absolutely incredible what is happening to Trump, what is happening to Leo Leonard here. I mean, apparently if you have friends in high places and maybe you do something, you're part of a conservative organization, the Democrats will call you up, or the Congress is going to start calling you up. That seems like really Soviet stylish. Yeah.
And if you want to hear of a real scandal, Paul, I mean, this is just so shocking. But according to the Judiciary Committee and their investigation of Leo, 15 years ago, Leo went on a fishing trip.
Yeah.
He went fishing with Justice Alito. Oh, and my goodness, that means there's collusion. That means that maybe Leo is inappropriately influencing how the Supreme Court votes.
Yeah.
So that was actually brought up as an example as to why they have to put these conservative justices under a microscope.
What?
But you know what's ignored? What is ignored is when a liberal justice speaks before Planned Parenthood, for example.
Oh, yeah, that's totally fine.
Or speaks before a liberal organization.
Yeah.
You know, shouldn't that
or
be put under a microscope?
Or when a Senate leader like Chuck Schumer stands up and openly threatens the Supreme Court justices in an inflammatory speech.
Well, didn't the president do that as well? Didn't Biden do that at his State of the Union?
You know, the mobs assembled outside the Supreme Court justices' houses in the lead up to the Roe v. Wade decision.
Yeah.
But that's all okay. Because, you see, we have to understand. I mean, I think a lot of this stems from January 6th, which will be remembered in history as perhaps as the Reichstag fire in American history. It's being justified in the following manner. All of these people who are on the right have shown themselves to be a clear and present danger to our democracy. And so therefore, all ends are justified.
Yes.
All means are justified, excuse me, because the end is to make sure not only that January 6th never happens again, but nothing like unto it. And that would include, of course, a bona fide revolution at the ballot box
right.
that could really turn D.C. and Capitol Hill inside out, which they're afraid could happen this November. So we're going to go after the Supreme Court. I mean, heaven knows, you know, Clarence Thomas has been the best guy on the Supreme Court since he was first sworn in.
Yeah.
And I am old enough to remember that faux scandal that was whipped up. I mean,
Alito's been pretty solid, too.
Well, and you know, regarding the Supreme Court, people don't realize that it is the Democrats that started this way back in the late 1980s before Clarence Thomas even.
With Bork,
when they successfully, Bork and then the other guy, Anthony, whatever his name is, they got rid of him too. Two straight Reagan nominees for Supreme Court for the first time ever were subject to ideological tests. And that's become standard now. That's de rigueur now, whenever you have a new.
What?
But that was never done before. Okay, so they started the ball rolling. And the most contemptible campaign up until the recent ones under Trump was the campaign to try to destroy Clarence Thomas. I remember watching the guy testify. His wife is sitting next to him, literally in tears. His white wife, by the way, he's in a mixed racial marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
Ginny.
This idea.
Ginny or Ginny, right?
Yeah, Ginny. And so you know, that's obviously unacceptable. You know, he's off the plantation. You know, he doesn't have the right thought. The right thought patterns and opinions that prominent Black Americans in politics and law are supposed
right.
to have.
They target those.
So he's been their number one target ever since, and he's turned out to be the primo constitutionalist on the Supreme Court.
He's solid. You can read his opinion.
Absolutely. Thank goodness he hasn't retired yet.
Before we finish this, Gary, I think we do need to mention that this is part of an effort to basically get some of these Supreme Court justices to recuse themselves from certain cases, right?
And the left is approaching it in terms of the opposite of packing the Supreme Court. They're approaching it as reverse packing the Supreme Court, because they really don't recognize that these justices properly should be on the Supreme Court to begin with.
Yeah.
And so it's a reverse packing. Well, let's get them off the Supreme Court, or if we can't do that, let's at least force them to recuse themselves from certain cases so that the liberal justices can then decide and make the law whatever they want to make the law.
Yeah, this is extremely concerning. Again, we have private citizens and their crosshairs here. These people will stop at nothing. So we're going to be watching this, and I'm sure it's no coincidence that Leo Leonard just happens to be the co-chair of the Federalist Society. Thanks, guys. After this, the CEO of the John Birch Society is going to join me, and we're going to talk about action.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
All right, folks. So I'm joined by the CEO of the John Birch Society, Bill Hahn. Welcome, sir.
Sir, thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, yes. That's a good thing to have. You're everyone's boss. But more importantly, you got some great stuff to share. You got some great news to share.
Absolutely.
Now, the thing about Birchers, the John Birch Society has members everywhere, and we're always working, and they're working on local projects in coordination with a bigger agenda that's national. And so I'd say almost everything that they do on the ground never makes it on this show or even on some of the bulletins. But we do have a story today of showing the power of organization. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about
this? Yeah, absolutely. And we heard about this over the last week. So on Friday, there were some emails that were sent around. And then this morning during our 9 o'clock meeting, we discussed it, you know, even further. So. But I'm going to let the coordinator actually tell it in her own words. So I'm just going to read her email real quick.
This is Nicole Sanders, who's the regional coordinator. Is it for parts of Illinois, parts of Minnesota?
Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Okay.
Yep, exactly. So she writes, "A member and I attended a Guns Save Life chapter meeting in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, where Convention of States was a featured speaker for April. I arrived an hour before the meeting, started to blanket the table with JBS ConCon material, and the member asked the host to allow me to speak after COS to present the other side of the Article 5 debate. The two gentlemen from COS arrived about 10 minutes after the meeting started, and once they sat down, they noticed all the JBS materials on the tables and started to read them. During the speech, the crowd gave them a hard time, which caused the COS speaker to get flustered and resulted in a very bad explanation of the topic. During his speech, he told the crowd that JBS is welcome to come next month to give a presentation, not knowing that the organizers already planned to allow me to speak after them. He finished by saying something along the lines of, "Look at the state of our country, we have to do something." She continues, "I presented the JBS side of the Article 5 debate and ended by saying, after every shooting, every leftist is on the media saying innocent lives are being taken and we must pass common sense gun control to stop the slaughtering of our children." Well, this is the same logic that Article 5 advocates have when they say we're losing our country and we have to do something. "I believe," she writes, "they lost the crowd when the gentleman next to me asked about the possible risks of a convention and they replied that there wasn't any. I asked the crowd, who here truly believes the left is going to allow the right to dictate the rules of a convention and control the part of our Constitution that is up for debate? And not just the left, but every enemy of America will try to influence the outcome. And not one person raised their hand. I also explained how we were all there that night because our elected officials are not currently following the Constitution and what makes anyone think they will follow after it's changed." Before the meeting ended, COS asked attendees to sign their petition for a convention, and only two out of about 50 to 60 people in the room signed.
Yeah. And we have suspicions about those two.
Yeah. Well, we don't know if they were the speakers, but anyway, she concludes, "I have to say, I have never had more fun attending an event before. Our opposition can spout all the lies they want, but when birchers show up organized, prepared, and educated with the truth,
yeah,
the truth will always shine in the darkness."
Yes. This is... The CONCON, the Article 5 convention, that's been one of our most successful campaigns. And for those who are listening or watching who may not be familiar, we essentially oppose it because, one, we already have a really good constitution and the problem is obedience to it, not necessarily the contents of it. And like you mentioned there, like we help try to help people understand is it's like, you really think they're going to sit by while a convention is called? I mean, they rigged an election. You know, it's like, let's seriously think about this. But we are in a fortunate position in the sense that we do have a good, we have a good constitution. It's just a matter of getting people to obey it, to adhere. I mean, in the second segment, we're talking about the fact that the FISA courts have already acknowledged that the government is violating its own rules. They documented like 288,000 instances. It's like, the rules are there. The laws are there. They're being flaunted. But what happens is if we change everything, then they're going to be more than happy to jump in and change it. So now they have every legitimate reason to remake this country into the socialist hellhole that they want.
Yeah, and it goes back to education. You know, the Founding Fathers set this up as a very unique system of government under the Republic, right? Rule of law and not rule of men. And so it's very important to get back to those founding principles so that the electorate understands what these limitations are. Because when we do not hold our government officials accountable, then this is we're seeing it play out right now of what happens when we don't.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have to say that the two instances, there's two things that strike me in regards to this, the Convention of States giving their presentation. Two things is one, they didn't really know their audience. So here they are in Illinois talking about, about a convention and so on and so forth, how they'd be represented. But yet, how many people in that audience or in the state of Illinois are going to think that Illinois is going to send constitutionalists to a convention? I mean,
that's crazy.
With Chicago, Illinois? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So that's one. And the other is that on the board of directors or an expert that the board of directors had was Robert George, and this gentleman for the Convention of States, and this gentleman had participated in an exercise that saw the Second Amendment being rewritten, and so they are at a Guns Save Life event, and yet, you know, they're not there to advocate, obviously, for the you know, for the alteration of the Second Amendment, but yet somebody on their board or an expert to the board had already shown that you know, to be the case, and the leader of the organization, Mark Meckler, promotes this gentleman, you know. So how does that work? And again, not knowing the audience, I mean, it's very not good, you know, on their part. But
yeah.
So again, it all goes back to education, and you know, we talk about action. The first, and we basically have a 3-step process here at you know, at the John Birch Society. It's 1, it's educate yourself; 2, educate others; and 3, take action. And really, what does that mean? You know, we put out so many materials in regards to you know, educating yourself. So. You know, we've got the Constitution is a Solution. You know, the multi-DVD workshop. Yeah, it is huge. I mean, we go through the Constitution. You know, Robert Brown does. He does this. Mm-hmm. Goes through the Constitution, you know, line by line, and hits all of the, you know, the major parts, and even the minor parts as well.
Yeah,
that are really important. Overview of America is another one. You know, we hit the principles of the, you know, of the founding. The different types of governments, different types of you know, economic systems, why the founding fathers settled upon what they did is so important.
Yeah,
and of course the take action is joining the John Birch Society and working with the organization on a local level, which means you're standing shoulder to shoulder next to other like-minded you know, individuals in your community.
Yeah,
you know, so very important, and this is exactly how the founding fathers set it up. In order to build their movement for independence,
absolutely,
before they even picked up a rifle, you know, on the Lexington Green.
Yeah, I want to mention also for those who are listening, you can go to jbs.org and under education, you go to the Constitution video, and we offer it. You can watch it. The reason, I mean, that's what got me into the fold. Yeah. I had an acquaintance back in Montana. He texted it to me.
Your doctor, wasn't it?
Yes, my naturopathic doctor, yeah. And it totally opened up my mind. And so I think, you know, that's one of those examples, one of the many examples where you can help bring people into the fold. We have lots of tools. I mean, when you go to jbs.org, there's so much under education, under the take action and the action projects. We don't just say what you can do. We give you the background. So yes. We do, like you said, I want to reinforce that. It's go to jbs.org. See our action projects, but also when you go to take action, there's a part there where you can become a member, you can get in touch with a coordinator, and kudos to the team, kudos to the staff. Thank you, Bill Hahn, and thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of New American Daily. Remember to visit newamerican.com for more Truth Behind the News, and we'll see you tomorrow.